We can start, you know, formal meeting, you know.
Yeah.
Everybody's not here, so we can go ahead and maybe you can
okay, fine.
Tell them what's going on and
sure.
Explain it
sure.
to them, then they'll go from there.
Okay. Well, maybe I could call our little meeting to order, and if could get my wife to stop talking, and then we could. Just kidding. Well, my name is Tom Berger, and I've been traveling around Alaska to hear what the people have to say about the land claim settlement, about ANCSA, the corporations, 1991, selling your shares, all of those questions. And I've been traveling in the Chugach region this week, and we had meetings at Seward and at Tetitlek, at IAC. We were at Port Graham last night, and we're here at English Bay today. And we've already had about 50 people from the Chugach region testify. This is just an informal meeting, and all that I want to do is to ask you to take this opportunity to tell me about what difference land claims has made here in English Bay or to you in your own life. I hope that you'll feel free to tell me what you think about the Chugach Regional Corporation, how it's been working, about your village corporation here at English Bay, how it has been working, the good points and the bad points. As you know, in 1991, you will be able to sell your shares in your own village corporation and in your regional corporation, and if enough people sell their shares to outsiders, to non-natives, to other corporations, then you could lose control of your corporations and you could lose the land that the corporations hold. In the 1990s, some of the land that the corporations hold will be taxable by the city and borough and state governments, and if land is being used for subsistence, then it doesn't usually generate revenue that enables you to pay taxes, so you should be thinking about that. What will happen if the corporation lands have to pay taxes, and where they're going to get the money to pay the taxes? And then wherever we've gone, people have been concerned about the fact that children born since 1971 aren't entitled to be enrolled as shareholders until their parents die, and if their parents leave their shares to them. So all of these questions have come up, And of course, another question that always comes up is the question of native sovereignty, native self-government. And some of the people have said, well, maybe the best way to protect our land is to have the corporations transfer the land to the traditional councils or the IRA governments and let them hold the land because they can't be taken over by outsiders and they don't have to pay taxes and they can pass the land on from one generation to the next. Well, don't feel that you have to speak about all of these questions or even any of them. You just tell me what's on your mind, how you feel about ANCSA, where you think it has gotten you, and maybe you could tell me where you think we ought to go from here. If you have any thoughts about 1991, let me have those. Some people came with me. My wife Beverly, who's taking a few photographs, if you don't mind. Jim Sykes, who's sitting here with the earphones, he's just taking everything down on tape so that it will be recorded and then written up, typed up, and we'll send you a copy of everything that is said today in the transcript. And when I finish traveling, I've been to 31 villages and towns already, and I've been traveling since February, and I'll keep on traveling till about January, February next year, and after that I'll write a report about land claims, about what you think of it all, and I'll make my recommendations about 1991, Native sovereignty, and what ought to be done to enable Alaska Natives to hang on to their land, if that's what they want to do, and most of them have told me that's what they want to do, to hang on to the land they got back in 1971. And I'll send that report to you. That'll be made public in the summer of 1985, and I'll send a copy to everybody who's spoken at these meetings, and of course I'll send a copy to your village council and your village corporation. So, you all know Doric Meshaw, who's sitting behind me, who helped to organize the meeting, and Carolyn Moyer, who's a writer, who's traveling with us this week. And so, now that I've had something to say, just feel free to talk yourselves, and if you wouldn't mind just coming to the table to say your piece, then we can take it down on tape over these microphones, and we'll have a chance to get it typed up later so that when I'm writing my report next year, I will have a record of what all of you said today, and it won't be lost into thin air. So we're glad to be here today, and the weather here is a lot better than it was in Port Graham this morning when we got out of bed, so we're really enjoying seeing this very pretty place, and now that we're here, I better stop talking and let you people say something.
Thanks, Mr. Bridges.
Yeah, I guess I should tell you what happened in back in 1971 on the Land Claim Act, you know.
Maybe you give us your name. I know it's
Vincent Kvasnikov.
And you're the president of the
right, the village council.
Village council. Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I remember that back in 71, you know, that we didn't have any telephone, we didn't have any radio. That's just one radio, you know, we could contact the airlines, and nobody knew what was happening, you know, and nobody still don't know about this Land Claim Act, and well, anyways, what worries me now is there's two important things that I hate to, you know, lose: that subsistence and the land. If we start losing our land, then how can we subsist, and you know, in so many years from now? And there's a lot of us don't understand what land claim is here in the village. then we do have problem, and maybe when somebody asks us questions and we don't know it, and we still don't know it. As far as I'm concerned, you know, and my expectation is that land was given to us and it's ours. That's how I feel, you know. And now they're gonna turn around back in 1991 to try to take it away from us and under some taxation thing, I think, or whatever. Then there, if we try to do some development and we don't have the skills here, you know, to do anything like that, and and they gave us only, what, 20 years to do it, and a lot of us haven't done anything, you know, our corporations and some original corporations, you know. And what's going to happen, and another thing, and how can we protect these shares, you know, when we start losing it back in 1991, and how can we get it back to the natives' hands instead of having some outsider come in and take them all, you know, and start developing something and kick us out from our villages. Hopefully it doesn't happen like that. So if we can get any alternative approaches on it, I mean, I'd sure appreciate that if somebody could give us an idea, you know. And that's all I know, you know.
Maybe I could just ask you a couple of questions, Mr. Kvasnikov. This is a village that has a council. Is it a state chartered council or is it a traditional council?
Traditional council. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how many people serve on the council?
Six, I think. Six. Right on. Six.
And about how many people altogether live in the village?
About 135, 40 somewhere. That's with the teachers, you know, and maybe including. Is it? Yeah.
And does the village council have any employees, full-time or part-time?
Let's see, we have one full-time and one part-time, two part-times, I think. Mm-hmm.
Well, there are different ideas about how to hang on to the land, and I'm looking at all of them. Some people say, well, let's pass a law that says the Alaska Natives can't sell their shares in 1991 so that the corporations and the land cannot fall into the hands of outsiders. That's one possibility. There are some legal and constitutional difficulties connected with that. Mm-hmm. Another possibility that people raise is, well, let's have the corporations transfer the land to the traditional council, say in English Bay, because the traditional council consists of native people only, and it can't be taken over by outsiders, can't be taxed. Then there are other suggestions about establishing trusts in which native people would be the trustees and hold on to the land in that way. And we're looking at what the Indians have done in Maine. In the state of Maine, the Indians just reached a settlement with the United States government a couple of years ago, so we're looking at how they decided to protect their land. The Eskimos and the Indians in northern Canada have just recently reached settlements with the government of Canada, and they've got some new ideas about how to protect native land. And we've even had people from Australia come to tell us about what they're doing. So when I write my report next year, I'll make my recommendation about the best way for you to hang on to your land. Going out to the villages and the towns like this, I can find out how you feel about your land, about your government, about shares, taxation, and subsistence. Subsistence is something comes up every meeting. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad you touched on those points. Well, who's next?
Mr. Berger, I want to ask one more question.
Yeah, go ahead.
About these native allotments, will those be taxed too? Or?
No, native allotments, that is the people that got 160 acres of land, those are held in trust by the Department of the Interior, and they can't be taxed by the city, the borough, or the state. So the people who hold native allotments don't have to worry about paying property taxes on their allotments. It's the corporation land, the land held by the local village corporation and by the Chugach Regional Corporation, that is likely to be taxed after 1991. Now, if land is developed in the meantime, you have to pay taxes on it, but after 1991, you may have to pay taxes whether it's developed or not. So even subsistence lands might have to pay taxes after that. But not the allotments. They don't have to pay taxes even after 1991.
Mm-hmm. Will they be taxed partially wherever you developed or
well,
the whole?
I'm just saying that right now your corporation lands can't be taxed unless you develop them. And of course there are big arguments about what development is. But after 1991, your lands could be taxed whether developed or not. Even if they were just used for subsistence, they could still be taxed. So that's one of the problems that you might face after 1991, unless something is done about it.
Mm-hmm. What can you do about it?
Well, I was saying that under the present legislation, you could try to put the subsistence land into the land bank, and then it wouldn't be taxed. But there are some problems connected with that. The state has to agree to it. It has to be a management regime that's consistent with state and federal uses and purposes. The second way, as I was saying to Mr. Kvasnikov, is to, if people wanted to do this, is to turn the land over to traditional councils and IRA governments, because if they hold land, their land can't be taxed. And then there's a third way that we're looking into, and that is setting up a trust in which, for instance, all the people in this village would be trustees of their own land. But there would be an agreement that it couldn't be taxed. We're looking into all those things. I'm here really just to find out how you feel about all this. Congress said that your land could be, the ownership of your land could be diluted after 1991. White people could buy in and maybe a majority and take over your land. They said your land could be taxed. If you sell your shares in 1991, well, you get some money for them, presumably, if they're worth something, and you could use the money to build a house or buy a truck or do something, a fish boat. But if you, once you sell those shares, you can't get them back again. And if enough of you sell your shares, then you lose your land. So it's that kind of choice that awaits you, and I just want to know how people feel about it. And that's
then another thing on this, you know, we have problem with fishing games, and we're pretty much limited, you know, when we go out and do our hunting. And before, you know, it never was like that, I remember. And, now, after that, seems like after the Land Claim Act, there's a lot of change in the village, you know, and it's, traditional lifestyle is going away pretty fast. Either that land claim is affecting, or I just don't know.
Well, people here mostly make their living by fishing, I guess.
Yes, everybody's a subsistence here in the village.
Everybody's engaged in subsistence fishing?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What about commercial fishing?
We do commercial fishing too, yeah. Very few do commercial, you know, the people that have a permit, you know, that's set net or seining. There's only a couple of permit holders and seining here, I think, in the village. Then rest are set netters. About five, maybe four, somewhere. Is it?
Four seine permits.
Mm-hmm.
And you said some set netters?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Let's see. One, two, three, four, five, six, maybe. Six set netters permits.
Well, maybe you could tell me a little bit about your way you look at these issues.
Why can't we about those shares? Mm-hmm. Make it different from the land. We can sell the. You know what I'm trying to say.
Well, that's something people have said in a lot of villages. They say, why can't we separate the land from the corporations and just keep the land separately and then let the corporations carry on with their businesses? But if they go bankrupt or if somebody tries to take them over, the land will still be safe. And all of the schemes I set out a minute ago are ways that have been proposed to deal with that. If the corporation turns its land over to the traditional council or the IRA government, then that's one way of separating the land from the corporations. Another way would be to set up a trust in which all the people would hold the land, but they wouldn't be able to sell their interest in the land. The interest would simply pass from one generation to the next automatically. That's certainly something that I will be reporting on to you, and I will suggest to you when I write my report what the best way is to handle this.
Don't just give me your name.
Yeah, I'm Waldo Cook, and from the looks of things right now, which would give us the most power over our land? Which one of the proposals would give us the most say over what we do with our land?
Well, that depends on what you want to do with your land. What I'd really like to know is
that depends on what you want to do with your land. What I'd like to know is in what ways you want to be able to control the land. Is it who can put up a house, or is it hunting and fishing and that you want to control, or what is it? Maybe if you could let me have your thoughts on that.
Well, I'll wait for the plane to go over first. I don't really think that it should really be up to us, because it'll be the next generation, our children, that are going to be, you know, wanting to use the land, and they're they're the ones who are going to have to make the decisions on how to do it, and they've got a, you know, they've got the chance that we've got, that we didn't have, to be more educated on, you know, on the legal things and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, they,
but
go ahead.
Part of it be subsistence, and you know, the village is going to expand. People are going to, you know, have to have some place to live, and you know, there's, like you're saying, there's all them things, and which way would really, or we could have the freedom to say, you know, this part will be for subsistence, and this little tract will be for village expansion and stuff like that. I was wondering which way would, looks like it'd be it'd give us more say over it.
Yeah. Well, let me spend a little more time considering which way would be the best, and I'll certainly set that out in my report. It may be, you know, that for some villages one way is the best, for other villages another way is the best. This is a big state and a lot of different preferences. Some of the urban Indians in Fairbanks, for instance, who spoke to me, said, we just want to sell our shares in 1991, get some money out of this thing. We never got anything out of ANCSA, you know, never got anything out of the land settlement. Just let us get some bucks and we'll buy a car or something. Whereas in the villages, people feel a little differently about it. They don't want to see their shares go into the hands of outsiders. It all depends.
On this housing, is that part of the same deal, or is that just something different? Is there any way you can help us?
No, not on the housing. The housing is, I'm not looking into the housing, and we ran into that at Tetitlek. They were pretty unhappy about the housing there. It's on stilts and guy wires. And, yeah, do you want to come over and speak at the table, sir? Well, why not? Just give me your name, if you wouldn't mind.
Nick Tanapi.
Tell me about the housing.
Well, they come in here and they say you're going to build this bunch of houses there, and they want everybody to sign up for it there. And there ain't no way these people can keep up with the payments. And they get so far behind, and they write and tell us there that you're going to take it away. Yeah. I mean, is there some way you can help us protect on that? Shit, there ain't enough money around here to keep up on house payments. There's a few chosen, that's about it, you know, they can keep up their payments there, but
yeah. Well, no, I
you
can't.
You look at the housing bill there, shit, that's, I mean, this is our land. Yeah. You're gonna come over here and sell it anyhow. I mean, if they take your house away there, it's part of us.
Well, I can tell you that's a complaint we've run into in a lot of places, is about the housing, the quality of the housing, the payments. But I can't promise to make any recommendations about that. I'm really...
We'll look into it there, because there ain't no money here.
There what?
There ain't no money here. Mm-hmm. I mean, they come in here and they build us homes there, and expect us to keep up with the payments there, you know, and sell us $80,000 homes there and there. Piece of junk.
Yeah, I,
And that's the way they're going to get into our village.
You mean if people are kicked out of their house, then they'll sell it to somebody else, is
right.
That it?
It would be open to anybody. You know, anybody could come in and
buy the homes, you know, and start living. I know that's the fastest way we can draw outsiders to come in here and live, you know, in your village. And I'm pretty sure sooner or later we'll be pushed out like that, you know.
Well,
from our village.
Yeah, apart from the housing, the only way to deal with that is if your council had the right to decide if to come and live here or not.
Mm-hmm.
That's, for instance, that's really what you're talking about,
mm-hmm.
and that that if that's what you want, that means you're really asking for the traditional council to have increased powers over who can come and live here.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very important question.
I've been experienced a little bit on that too, you know, like back in Soldovia. There used to be some natives living right in the central there, you know. And outsiders come in and push them out, and there's only maybe 3-4 of them living somewhere back in the sticks.
Yeah.
And same thing around Kenai, or maybe in Inilchik. Mm-hmm. There's 3 villages. And I don't want to see that happen here, you know, in this village. I like to see the own people, you know, have the control over
yeah.
the community.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. That's an important point. I'm not here representing the federal government or the state government.
Mm-hmm.
I was asked to come by 2 international Native peoples organizations, the ICC, which represents Eskimos in Alaska, Greenland, and Canada, and the World Council of Indigenous People, which represents Indians in North and South America. So I'm...
Home, really?
Yeah.
Since you guys are looking into it there, you might as well look into that.
Well, there are tribal councils and traditional councils in Alaska that have the right to decide who can live in the village, and there are tribal councils and traditional councils that are now claiming that right, and it's an important question.
If we go back into succession, Mr.
Yeah, please do.
Is there any way that these lands could be protected, you know, that we can't subsist just from this village here? We have to sometimes go out somewhere, you know, further down, maybe further up, you know, just small areas where we subsist. And how could this be protected, you know, and that we wouldn't lose them if we can't?
Well, that depends on the federal and state laws about those lands, and have the subsistence preference that you share with native and non-native people over those lands, but that's something that depends in the end on what laws they pass in Juneau and in Washington, D.C., what access you have to those lands and waters.
Mm-hmm. See, we just can't subsist here, you know, there wouldn't be enough or nothing left pretty soon. Then we have to go out like Dogfish Bay, Port Luck, maybe Jim Island and places like that where we can subsist.
What are the people are mainly engaged in fishing here. Do they do any hunting?
Yes, they do hunting. Mainly seal and bear and goats.
Seal?
Seal, bear and goats, some ducks, you know.
And how much land does the village corporation hold?
I think it's 63 or, what is it, Nick? 63,000 acres?
Mm-hmm.
The village corporation,
mm-hmm.
I think, owns.
Yeah.
I remember selecting it, 63,000 acres. Is it? Am I right? If I'm wrong, tell me if that's right. Do you know? About 62, that's what I figured.
63,000 acres,
mm-hmm.
eh?
Now, if we go IRA, can that be protected, you know? Can we take that whole 63 acres, 63,000 acres, whatever?
Well, if you go IRA, you can transfer the 63,000 acres to the IRA. Mm-hmm. Now, there's some question about whether or not everybody who's a shareholder would have to agree to the transfer. Mm-hmm. The Secretary of the Interior has indicated that he might not accept the transfer, that is, he has to hold the land in trust for you. He's indicated, I don't know whether it's a firm statement of policy or not, but he indicated when he was here with President Reagan in the spring that he wouldn't accept transfers of land from the corporations to hold in trust for the IRAs, and that's why we're looking into other kinds of trusts which don't involve the Secretary of Interior. But if you could do it that way, a lot of people think that's a clean-cut way of doing it. But this ANCSA, you know, is a complicated thing, and it's a little bit like unscrambling an omelet. Not easy to do.
How do the Indians outside get away with that? I mean, they don't have to pay taxes and all that.
Yeah, your question is, how do the Indians outside do this? They don't have to pay taxes. Well, that's right. In the lower 48, the Indians don't have to pay taxes on their land because, for the most part, it's reservation land held in trust for them by the federal government.
As commercial fishing down Washington, they don't have to pay. You know, they make a couple hundred thousand dollars there, and they don't have to pay tax on that.
Well, sometimes in the lower 48, they don't have to pay income tax if they earn the income on the reservation. That's a separate question.
Well, this is out in the sound. This is
white people's country. I don't know how they manage that.
Well, we should be protected.
One thing they've got in Washington,
in a way, because we're Indian too.
Well, one thing they've got in Washington State is the Indians have the right in perpetuity to 50% of the harvest on the salmon rivers there, and
catch.
And the in Canada now, the federal government is making agreements with the Eskimos and the Indians that give them a certain percentage of the harvest or the catch for all time, so that they won't lose any more, even if more fishermen come in. Now, that's a pretty that's pretty helpful, it seems to me, from the natives' point of view. Because even if the white population increases, the native share of the salmon or the muskox or the wildlife remains the same. And those are proposals that some people have made, but it might be hard to get those adopted in Alaska.
Well, we should be protected. We're just like, we're extinct animals. You don't find too many full-blooded Elliots anymore. They're gone.
Well, how about you people? Something to say at this end of the table?
Is it possible for...
Sure. Do you want to just... Sorry, we just want to make sure we get it all done. Do we have your name?
Nancy Yetton. Is it possible for each village to have their own ways of life set up so that they can abide by it? Where also different villages can set up their own ways of life and also abide by it I'm not sure how to put this, but being able to live their own way of life. without having any interference, you know, with like the subsistence law that's coming up now and the interference they're having here in the village, not being able to catch the amount of fish they have in the past.
Well, I don't think you can ever live without interference from outside. I mean, it's a big world out there and a lot of people, and they want your land, they want the fish, they want the resources. So the question is, what's the best way for you to defend what you've got? I think the first thing to be considered is, how do you keep the land you got in 1971? How do you prevent that land getting away from you in 1991? How do you improve the subsistence laws from the point of view of native people? Those are the two of the, really, I think, the two biggest issues in the villages, and we're looking into ways in which that might be done. But I don't think you'll ever get to a stage where people just leave you alone. You know, I just don't think that's going to happen in 1984, 1985, or 1995.
Well, I didn't mean necessarily to be not interfered with outsiders, but pretty much so you can live the pace of life you have in the past. You know, the fishing, the hunting, that is so important to all the natives of Alaska.
Well, in an ideal world, maybe you could get some guarantees for fishing and hunting. In one part of northern Canada, just last month, the Canadian government reached an agreement with the Eskimos that said they can have all this land. There's about 2,500 Eskimos in this particular place, and they said you can have 38,000 square miles of land in fee simple, surface and subsurface. That's a lot of land. And they said you can have all the fish and game on that land. And then they said over another 168,000 square miles, you will be the exclusive owners of all the bears, the polar bears, the brown bears, and the black bears and the grizzly bears, and you will be the exclusive owners of the muskox. And in addition, we'll let you have a subsistence preference, but it will be ethnically based. That is, only natives get the subsistence preference. Now, that's a pretty good setup they've got, but that's because they worked for that for the last 10 years. They were able to look at what you had in ANCSA. They would say to the Canadian government, well, we don't want this part of ANCSA, but this part we might take. They have a perpetual membership corporation, a perpetual membership trust. So the land is held by the trust. Every child that's born becomes a member of the trust. Everybody that dies ceases to be a member. You can't have shares, you can't sell shares, you can't leave them to your children. When you die, you lose your interest. Your children, as soon as they're born, they get their interest. But now these people have had a chance to look at what's happened to you and the Lower 48 and other countries, and so they've got a pretty good land settlement. But it may be that you can say now, well, look, a lot of things have changed since 1971, and we want to improve this setup. And of course, in every country, native people are saying that they want to govern themselves. They want to have the right to decide what happens in their villages and on their land. You're not the only ones who are asking for that. People all over the world are saying that. When the United States government reached its agreement with the Indians in Maine, just a couple of years ago, they both agreed to that they wouldn't use ANCSA as a model. They said, let's have something that provides for protection of the land and the interests of these people in a better way. So you were the pioneers back in 1971. You know, you reached the first big land claim settlement in the modern era. And now other Native people in the lower 48, Canada, Australia, are all making some pretty significant improvements on what you got. And it may be that the time has come to review what you got and say, look, we were left behind in certain areas. You know, outside in the lower 48 and in other countries, all we ever heard of about your land claim settlement was that you were all going to be millionaires. Yeah. And
we are.
Yeah, how many of us? Many of them villages are. They're all up in the north slope.
Well, what do you think we should do about it there? What is your idea of helping us protect our land? We don't know, really.
Well, I'm just going around the state and putting together ideas piece by piece, and when I've got the whole picture together in early in 1985, I'll write it out and I'll make it public. But right at the moment, I just want to know what's going on out here and what people are really concerned about. If it turns out that you're not all millionaires, you're not all driving Cadillacs, well, that's one thing that it's useful to know. But where do we go from there? And
yeah, because we really don't know what to do there. You say, yeah, 91 there, and we get us. A-